So this is a course on abelian varieties and cryptography. Our aim is to meet at least once a week. But there are lots of interruptions because this is a very packed term with lots of activities going on in the special year. It's very hard to schedule a regular course. initially I thought that we would, because of the scheduling problem, spread the course out over the year, but that's presenting even more difficulties. And so I'm going to try to finish it this term. The course meets Mondays 10 to 12, except when it conflicts, and this conflicts with a workshop. So I think, for example, 2 weeks from now there's a workshop on computational challenges, so we won't have lectures that week. But because of U of T requirements for, in case there are people, is anyone here taking the course for credit? Yeah, okay, so because of U of T requirements for a credit for a graduate course, there's not enough meetings, so we will have to meet, also meet on Wednesdays. But the scheduling is again going to be problematic. Allison is going to inform me what time we can get for that. Available time slots, and I will let you know when I know. So for example, this Wednesday I'd like to meet, but probably it might be, I think this Wednesday actually it might be possible to meet 10 to 12 because Dan Bernstein's course isn't going to start yet. So I will inform you of this or check the field's website if there is, when we're going to meet this Wednesday. Okay, so for this opening lecture, I wanted to sort of set the theme of what it is we're going to discuss and what topics we will cover and start in earnest next time. It's a little bit difficult to present this material, partly because it requires a rather broad kind of background. Some of you are cryptographers, so your exposure is to computational techniques. Some of you may be mathematicians or algebraic geometers in particular, and then you will be familiar with the geometric language. But we're trying to develop a theory that unifies this, so of necessity we will need both of those kind of skill sets. And you might find some parts of the course are already well known to you and others completely new, or the other way around when we speak about geometry or computational aspects. The second thing is that, so we're looking at abelian varieties. So I have some mostly over finite fields, but later on the discussion will be more general. So suppose I have a finite field, and I have an abelian variety over F. As I say, I'm going to give precise definitions later on. For now, let's start discussing it intuitively or not so rigorously. What does it mean to have an abelian variety defined over F? This means, firstly, A is a projective algebraic variety. In other words, it is given by a set of homogeneous, there is a set of homogeneous equations whose zeros define the points in A. So that is the points, the set A of F bar, where we choose
an algebraic closure F bar, and this set is the locus of zeros of a set of a finite set of homogeneous polynomials. These coefficients in F. So the first requirement for an abelian variety is that it be an algebraic variety, and projective. The projectiveness is reflected in the fact that I have a set of homogeneous polynomials defining the point set. Another way of saying it is that A has an embedding into projective space. I can formulate that a little bit differently. For example, I could have required instead that A be complete and then prove as a theorem that in fact it is projective. And the second thing is A is an algebraic group. So an abstract group means I have a composition law. I know how to add and subtract and I satisfy the group axioms. To be an algebraic group means that the composition law is given by morphisms of an algebraic variety. In other words, if I give you two points on A and I want to know what is their sum or product or whatever the composition is, then to compute that, I have rational functions in the coordinates of the two points that I started with. In other words, the method by which the composition law is determined is in terms of rational functions of the coordinates of the original function. So it's an algebraic group. So another way of saying it is, that is, there is a morphism, and we call it M, from A cross A to A, and which is the composition law. And a map iota, which gives the inverse. So there are morphisms. Both of these are morphisms of varieties, which turn AF bar into a group. And these morphisms are defined over F. Again, to me, defined over F means that these rational functions have coefficients which are in F. Okay. So I have an algebraic group that's also a projective algebraic variety. And the first theorem one proves about such a thing is A is necessarily commutative. Now, to be sure, you can think that I can define algebraic groups which are not commutative. For example, GL2, 2 by 2 invertible matrices over a field, that's an algebraic group. I can, right? So make a remark here. GLN, or GL2, let's say, is an algebraic group. This is over any field, and but clearly it's not commutative. So what is it that here forces this thing to be commutative? But it's certainly not a commutative. You all know what I mean by GL2. And by the way, interrupt me and ask if I say something or use a term or notation that's not familiar. As I say, we are a diverse group here, each of us having expertise and knowledge in different things. So it's quite possible that notation or terminology might be used that's not familiar, but it's not very difficult. So this is an algebraic group. These 2 by 2 invertible matrices, these coefficients in F, and clearly the composition law is the usual matrix multiplication. And because they're invertible matrices, they have an inverse
this iota exists as well. And clearly multiplication is given by linear, you know, degree one functions, in fact, in the coordinates. So that's clear, it's an algebraic group, but it's not commutative. As you know, matrix multiplication is not commutative. The point is, what makes the difference? Why is it here that we know it's commutative? And the point is, it is not projective. GL2 is not projective. In other words, I don't have an embedding of GL2 into projective space. So this requirement here that A be a complete variety is sort of what's forcing commutativity. And I'll give a proof of this later on. But the point that I want to show you that there's lots going on here, lots of structure, just from these hypotheses, that you've got a projective algebraic group. A lot of structure is forced. This is just the beginning. Okay. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So we have an algebraic group, and the point now is, what is the relationship to cryptography? So now the question is, we can try to base a public key crypto system on AFF, on the group AFF, or even AFF to the N, F sub N rather, where F sub N, F is the extension of degree N. I fixed an algebraic closure, so I have a unique tower. For each N, I have a unique extension of degree N. And we can try to base a public key crypto system on these groups in the usual sense that you develop a key exchange based on the points in this group, and you hope that discrete log problem if the discrete logarithm problem is difficult in this group, then it is mathematically secure. And if arithmetic is efficient, then it is a practical system. In other words, the two things to worry about in building a crypto system is certainly it should be sufficiently fast. And that means that the method of computing here, the group law, has to have sufficiently efficient algorithms for that. Then it's a practical tool, because if your system is too slow, people will tend to turn it off. And the second thing is that from the point of view of mathematical security, it relies, as usual, just as in the case of the elliptic curves, on the difficulty of solving the discrete logarithm problem in this group, that is computationally infeasible to compute discrete logarithms. It's important, by the way, I'm sure you those of you who are coming from the crypto background know that this is a very important adjective to add before security, because without it, it doesn't make sense. Security has many, many components, only one of which is mathematical security. Most often cited example, especially in mathematics talks, is the Diffie-Hellman key exchange. And then the speaker will go on to say that I take a group in which discrete log is hard, and party A chooses something, party B chooses something, they compute G to the A, G to the B, they exchange it, and each party has G to the AB, and that's secure because discrete log is hard. But of course, it's not secure at all. It's not secure because of the man-in-the-middle attack, but that has nothing to do with discrete log. It has nothing to do with mathematics. So the method, the protocol, can be weak for many reasons. So when we say here that we're believing this thing is secure, it's only we're believing it's mathematically secure by ensuring discrete log is hard. Whether it actually is secure in implementation about other things, that's a more complicated question. It's a complicated question even to formulate precisely, and that's why protocols are such an important and specialized field. An algebraic group which is commutative, and now we have our algebraic closure G F bar. So let's define G to be, consider the Galois group. Oh, by the way, so it, as I said in this talk, I'm going to be speaking from a sort of high level overview kind of perspective. And so I want to point out something that's going to be a subject of big concern in the course, namely that abelian varieties as studied traditionally by mathematicians have not been studied from the computational point of view, which is quite different from, let's say, the case of elliptic curves, which have been studied, curves in general, which have been studied extensively from the computational point of view. So I said, I guess here before starting G equals this, let's say case dimension of A equals 1. In other words, if I have a one-dimensional abelian variety, so I have a curve, this is an elliptic curve. I'm being a little bit vague, a little bit imprecise here, but it's okay. In the dimension 1 case, an abelian variety is an elliptic curve. Now, when we do try to build a crypto system using an elliptic curve, we've got lots of things that we can use. We've got the equation of the curve. In fact, we've got many equations of the curve. And we've got this morphism is completely explicit. If I tell you the x and y coordinates of these points, I can write down formulas, and you use those formulas to do the computation. And then you start a whole machinery for grinding and grinding and making those computations faster and faster. That's where the industry is. But here we've got a problem right at the outset, namely, there's no good way to give the equations that define an abelian variety. That's going to be a problem. And how do you even describe the points from a computational point of view? I mean, I can write a point like this, but how do I write it from a computational point of view? And then how do I make this sufficiently explicit? And even if I do make it explicit, how do I make it explicit so that it's practical to actually work with it? These are the big issues when we deal with the dimension bigger than one case. Because of a lack of equations. Now, in some cases, people have gotten around it. Namely, if you look at a special class of abelian varieties called the Jacobians of curves. So it's possible, if you have a curve, you can make a construction called the Jacobian construction. So that generates, that produces an abelian variety of dimension equal to the genus of the curve. And then because you're beginning with the curve, beginning probably with an equation of a curve, you try to make the arithmetic explicit using that extra piece of information. But maybe so I want to not take that approach. I want to look at abelian varieties in general. So we have to find a point of view that allows us to get an effective substitute for curve, for equations and points. And we're going to try to do that. I don't know how successful we will be, but anyway, in this course, we're going to try to do that. The idea is to replace to use more of the calculus of line bundles, and we'll find that to some extent it works. Okay. Okay, so let's look at D is the Galois group of F bar over F.
Of course, G is isomorphic to Z hat, profinite completion of Z. Because for a finite field, for each integer n, there's a unique extension of degree n, and that has Galois group Z mod n Z, and F bar is the union of all those extensions. So its Galois group is the inverse limit of Z mod n Z, which is another way of writing this, it's the product of all the LID completions. So it's a huge group. It's procyclic. It is a huge topological group. It's a huge group. It's procyclic in the sense that it's an inverse limit of cyclic groups, and it's got a topological generator. Namely Frobenius. So Frobenius, depending on how we normalize it, I guess here I'm taking x equals to x to the key. So let's say that F has q elements. Finite field, so it has a finite number of elements. Let's say it has q elements, so q is obviously some power of a prime. Then the map f bar to f bar, which sends x to the q, is what I mean by Frobenius, and give it a name, prob. So clearly it's an element of Galois F bar over F. It's an automorphism and leaves F fixed. But the point is it topologically generates the entire Galois group. In other words, the subgroup generated by this is dense in G. In particular, at any finite level, this Frobenius automorphism restricted to a finite level is the generator of the Galois group. Okay, now when I take this points, so I'm looking at the points on A over F bar, then there's a map. Okay, so certainly I have Frobenius acting on the underlying field. Since A is defined over capital F, it also acts on the points on A, right? Because it acts, it leaves invariant the equations defining A. And so therefore, if you have a point which satisfies the equations defining A and I apply Frobenius to it, that image is still a solution for those same equations, right? So certainly Frobenius acts on this. But now if I look at the endomorphisms, this is of course an automorphism, but if I look at the group ring generated by the automorphisms, then I have in here another automorphism, namely, not an automorphism, I have an endomorphism from here to here, which is multiplication by n. So for any integer n, I have the map n, which sends a point p to n times p. So n times p means I'm now, by the way, going to switch, I'm going to suppress the composition law. And so I'm just simply going to write, if I have two points p and q, I'm going to write mpq as p plus q, because I'm told that it's a commutative group, so I'm going to use additive notation. So I'm going to write p plus q for this composition law. So the map P goes to NP is an endomorphism. And so is the map, another endomorphism is the map The map Frobenius minus n time minus n is also not an endomorphism. So it sends a point P to what you think it does, namely Frobenius applied to P minus NP. But the point is that this map has a degree. So this is a certain integer. And you can think of it like this, as for a general point, the number of pre-images to a given point. So I take a point here, and for a general point, how often it's hit by a point in AFF bar. In other words, how often, how many solutions, if I give you Q, how many solutions P are there such that Q is equal to Frobenius P minus NP? That's what I mean by the degree. And we'll define it a little bit more slowly and precisely later on. But you have an integer. For each integer n, you have a certain integer. And now it's a theorem of Wey that these integer values fit together to form a polynomial. Might maybe write P sub A of T, so that for all n sufficiently large, P sub A of n is this integer. In other words, these integers, as I vary n, are actually values of a given polynomial. And P sub A is a polynomial with integer coefficients. It's not a hard construction, but this is a really amazing fact that such a thing exists. Because remember, I started out with an abelian variety over a finite field, characteristic P object. And I've come up with a polynomial to the characteristic zero object. There's integer coefficients. Well, you can say, well, that's fine. I mean, this way or some other way, I can certainly construct a polynomial. But why is that so marvelous? It's marvelous because this polynomial almost characterizes the abelian variety. Up to a finite group, this polynomial determines the abelian variety. So that's why it's an extremely important entity. Okay, so amazing fact, which I guess I will probably get to later. Maybe I'll state it here. Amazing fact, which also goes by the name of Tate's theorem, is that P sub A characterizes A up to isogeny. For now, just read it up to finite group. In other words, the only ambiguity introduced, if I know P sub A, I know A modulo a finite group. We're going to go through the proof of this theorem in the course. Okay, there's another reason why we're interested in this, namely the value at 1 of this polynomial gives me the number of points I evaluate this polynomial at 1, in other words, take the degree of Frobenius minus 1, that degree is the number of points. And you see, you can think of it like you can think of it like this. If degree measures the generic number of preimages, in particular it measures the number of preimages of 0, and so the value at 1 is Frobenius p minus p. So when is that 0? When p is fixed by Frobenius. So if I have a point in AFF bar that is fixed by the Galois group, because Frobenius topologically anyway generates the Galois group, then it's got to be in the ground field. And so that's why it picks up. That's a hand-waving proof that the value at 1 is the number of points in the ground field. Now this polynomial has more marvelous properties. If D is a dimension of A, by the way, this is also not a trivial concept, the dimension of a variety, so we'll define that. But if assuming we know what it means, if D is the dimension of A, then piece of A is a polynomial of degree 2D. And assuming I always get the normalization wrong, but let's see. I think it should be like this. It should be a monic polynomial. And if I factor it, over the algebraic closure, in other words, if I factor it over Q bar, remember it's a characteristic zero polynomial, if I factor it, then these omega i's are certain complex numbers, and their absolute value is constant over I, namely it's Q to the minus a half. Now, whether I might have mixed up the sign, so it's either Q to the half or Q to the minus a half. Point is, this holds for all I. Now, if I were to do, let me see, if I were to do, I could say it like this. In particular, if we write t as q to the minus s, so s is some complex number, and just make me change the variables here, then p then and set. Let's see, should we give it a name? Maybe let's call it zeta sub A of S. So kind of misleading a little bit. But it's okay. So this is a non-standard terminology just to be used for now. If I set this to be P sub A of Q to the minus S, then we see that if zeta A of S is 0,
then the real part of S is equal to a half. So this is, in other words, the Riemann hypothesis is true for this function. Fantastic fact. So in particular, from this information, I mean, this is sort of just to sort of to be kind of sensationalist. Whatever information we want has already been stated here. But if I put this together with this, then we have the following fact. The number of points on A, which as we said is P sub A of 1, is going to be, so now I see that I've normalized it wrongly, because P sub A of 1 is of course not going to have the right absolute value. So let's mess up your notes. I think I have to put it like that, because let me see, then I would need this. Is that correct? Certainly at 1 it has the right value. Well, I mean, I could mess up your notes less maybe by saying let's look, for this introductory talk it's okay to have it like this with q to the half, and then I have to make some changes here. Exercise for you. Figure out the right change of variables here. And the point is I want to have consistency with what I wrote here. There's always an ambiguity of which Frobenius we're using, arithmetic or geometric Frobenius. And so there's a flip of sign. And so depending on which one we choose, the polynomial get this relation and this relation change. But anyway, let's say this is what we want. And here, if I were to do that, then what I will get is, I want these roots then to have absolute value q to the half. Then the first term, the highest order term, is going to start off as q to the d, you see? Right? In terms of the size of q, power of q, the highest power of q that you get will be q to the d. And then the next one will be one where you miss one of the roots. So that's O of q to the d minus a half. Now this statement is very interesting, you see, is weaker than this statement. I'm deducing it from this. In the dimension 1 case, I'll make a remark. So d equals 1, we can essentially deduce the Riemann hypothesis, in other words that. Call this stop from stop. In other words, if I have an elliptic curve and I know that the number of points is like q plus O of q to the half, I can deduce the Riemann hypothesis. I can deduce that the eigenvalues of Frobenius are of absolute value square root of q. But for higher d, for d bigger than 1, star is a weaker statement. So this is what I'm calling, this statement here is what I'm calling the Riemann hypothesis.
Now we make a remark here that this fact that a d-dimensional abelian variety over a field of q elements has q to the d points is a reason, one reason, another remark. As the dimension increases, we get more points. So you have a group over the same field with more and more points. The elliptic curve over a field of q elements has roughly q points. It's a little bit startling first when you think of it. Elliptic curve you think is very complex kind of curve, and yet in terms of number of points up to first approximation it has the same number of points as a straight line. And here also it's saying that you have this very complicated d-dimensional variety, but up to first approximation it just looks like d-dimensional space in terms of the number of points. Of course, all the whole subtlety is in the error term. But anyway, as d increases, we get more points. So that means that if the only way to attack the discrete log problem on A of f is a generic baby step giant step type of thing, baby step giant step attack, then it would take O of q to the d over 2 steps. So at least from that point of view, it looks like maybe if you increase d, you increase the security without changing the ground field. The ground still has q elements. Of course, the problem is that this will be good only provided two things happen. Firstly, that we've not introduced such a complicated group that it's impossible to compute anything in that group. If that's the case, then it's useless. It may be very secure, but nobody can use it. The most secure system, by the way, is one that's turned off. No one will breach it. So the caveats here are that A, we have to find out, is it even possible to compute in this group? And that's a big problem, as I told you right at the beginning, because we don't have explicit descriptions of these things. So we have to find some way around that. The second caveat is that there may be other ways to attack the discrete log problem. You see, once you introduce complexity, you introduce holes. There's a saying that complexity is the enemy of security. So once you have a more complex object, it's possible maybe there are new ways to attack it. And indeed, all the work that people have done with higher dimensional abelian varieties, albeit all of them coming from Jacobians of curves, have shown that that is the case. But nevertheless, this philosophy is there. So if one can somehow address those two issues, then you've got something which potentially might be a better playing ground for a crypto system. The other thing is, by the way, that even if you couldn't use this as the basis of a crypto system, it's still important to understand these kind of problems for abelian varieties, which are not necessarily Jacobians, because they may be used in destructive ways. That is, they may be used to attack crypto systems that are based on elliptic curves or Jacobians of curves that cannot be attacked through curves. Again, that for that to make sense, it requires us to have some way of doing explicit arithmetic. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what's to be done. problems we need to address. One is arithmetic. We need an explicit description of the group law. And as I said, the naive method is not going to work. Firstly, you can try to make the equations defining an abelian variety explicit. The problem is that you'll get huge numbers of variables. You can take the product of an elliptic curve, but then it's not clear that you've increased the security. Yes, you can certainly take products of elliptic curves, then everything is explicit, but then it's not clear that I can't attack the discrete logarithm problem one factor at a time. I've got to twist it in some way. So those kind of things have been done. People have looked at, for example, an abelian variety, which maybe is a Jacobian of some higher genus curve, which over a base change becomes a product of elliptic curves. So that's a way of twisting that elliptic curve. If the base change is unreasonably large, a field extension which is unreasonably large, then you might be okay. That's a good way. But if you don't have that, or you don't have a Jacobian of a curve, this requires a new approach. And of course, as if that weren't bad enough, then we even ask for efficient description, efficient algorithm to compute. I think in this course, I will try to say something about the first part, namely attempts to get explicit description of the group law. And as I said, we're going to try to approach it through more effective or complete use of line bundles. Okay. There's lots of work that's been done on this question from the point of view of, in the case of Jacobians of hyperelliptic curves. And so there are lots of work. And Jacobians of other curves as well. And so much so that I think in terms of speed, they challenge the elliptic curve calculations. In other words, you can find situations where you can compute faster in a Jacobian of a hyperelliptic curve than in a corresponding elliptic curve. There's lots of papers on that, and probably some of it might have been covered in Tanya's workshop. The next thing is point counting. Here also we have a problem. So, as you know, we want a group that is essentially of prime order, pretty close to being of prime order. So that's another hard problem. How do you count? So we want A of F to be nearly prime. So we need a method of counting points. And here, I think the best thing we know is it's basically a baby step, giant step algorithm, but with some refinements based on knowing something about the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius modulo small primes. Okay. This issue of the primality of the group order, as I said, the algorithms for computing the group order is still exponential time. And then this issue of determining when or how often you could expect a group order to be nearly prime is quite a subtle problem. And we will talk about some results in that direction. There are some results which are of the following type, that if I start with an abelian variety in characteristic 0 and I try to reduce it mod p for different primes p, when can I expect to get something of prime order? So there are some results of that kind, some due to Alina, some due to Yuru, who is not here, and we will talk a little bit about that. Again, the techniques for addressing those kind of questions are rather diverse. They'll require us to use L functions in characteristic zero. But then there's some new problems that arise that you don't see at all in the one-dimensional case. New problems. New kinds of phenomena. You see, there is one way of, for example, generating elliptic curves that are suitable for cryptography is to start with a CM elliptic curve, okay, over the rationals, and then to reduce it modulo p. And then you check that under some circumstances you get a group that has nearly prime order. But you can try in the higher dimensional case, a new problem occurs here, namely, it is possible to have an abelian surface A, let's say over, I think it's possible to do it over Q. Maybe to be on the safe side over K, with K as a number field, with the property that firstly, A is absolutely simple, which means that A is not isogenous to a product of two elliptic curves. So absolutely means over the algebraic closure. So you start off with a surface which is not a which is an abelian surface, so it is an abelian variety, but you cannot decompose it as a product of two elliptic curves, even if I make a base change. But secondly, for any prime okay, the reduction mod p, A mod p, is a product of two elliptic curves. In fact, EP squared is an elliptic curve. Over the residue field. So that kind of CM method, where you start off with an elliptic curve over a number field, and then I reduce it mod p, and hope I can find a prime p, such that the reduction looks good for cryptography. If you try to do that in the higher dimensional case, you have to worry about this kind of issue that might arise. It starts with something absolutely simple, and yet no matter what prime you reduce it, it splits. In terms of L functions, by the way, this is a kind of weird phenomena. You have an L function. You see, the L function of A over the number field is a product of local L functions for each prime P. Now, at each prime P, the abelian variety is splitting as a square, which means the L function Euler factor looks like a square. So you have an Euler product, which a priori is a square of something. But it's not. But you cannot take the square root and get a reasonable function. So you have a really strange. So therefore, these kind of pathologies occur in the higher dimensional case. You have an L function which looks primitive. You cannot factor it in any way, and yet every Euler factor is a square. So it looks like it should be the square of something, but it's not. Okay. So we have to worry about. If we try to generalize the CM method, we have to worry about this kind of thing. But the good news is that in the CM case, remark that if A has CM, and I'm going to explain these things if when we come to them in more detail, so let me just state it like this. If A has CM, this pathology doesn't occur. But that's a theorem, it's not an easy theorem. So at first we worry and now we don't worry. In fact, the CM method can be made, but you do have to get around that in a certain way. Okay. It's a kind of failure of a local global principle, and there's lots more to do here in terms of what happens with the Abelian variety. Okay, the next thing is to look at pairings. These can be used in various ways. One way is certainly a destructive way, if one wanted to try to solve the discrete log problem using a pairing. So in this case, we have some integer m, and we look at a pairing of a bracket m, which is the points on A killed by m. So a bracket m means the points on A such that m times P is 0. And by the way, if P does not divide M, where P is the characteristic of F, then A bracket M is isomorphic as abelian group. As abelian group, it's isomorphic to Z mod MZ to the 2D. So this is as abelian group. I stress that the abelian groups because this contains a lot more information than just the group structures. It contains Galois action. Okay? There's a Galois action on this group. So that's a. In other words, this group contains information about Frobenius. This doesn't. So as abstract group, as abelian groups, they're isomorphic, but this contains extra information. And if P does divide M, then the following happens. P to the alpha. It's enough for me to look and tell you what happens for P to the alpha, because in any case, for any M, I can write if M is M0 times P to the alpha, where P does not divide M0, then this is as Galois modules is isomorphic to this. So this is not only as abelian groups, but as Galois modules. Chinese remainder theorem in the context of abelian varieties. So therefore, it's enough now to describe what this looks like, and here what we have is that A bracket P to the alpha is isomorphic to Z mod P to the alpha Z to the R. So there is an integer. And this R is constant over alpha, right? As I go up the tower, it's constant. This R is called the P rank. So I should write it the same way. R is called the P rank of A. So you know this in the case of the one-dimensional case. If D equals 1, you have two possibilities. A bracket P is either Z mod P, so this is R equals 1, or it's 0. Is R equals 0. So this is the super singular case. This is the ordinary case. Now, it shouldn't surprise you that in characteristic P, there will be fewer points of order P than points of order prime to P. For example, you all know that consider the equation P to the M minus 1 equals 0 over F bar. If P doesn't divide M, in other words, I'm looking for nth roots of unity. If P doesn't divide M, there are M solutions over the algebraic closure. But if P does divide M, let's say, for example, what about T to the P minus 1 equals 0? Well, I'm in characteristic P, so this is the same as T minus 1 to the P. Right? So therefore, the only root is T equals 1. So the pth roots of unity in characteristic P disappear. There's only one pth root of unity, namely 1. That's what's happening up here. It's sort of very, this is like, instead of the abelian variety, I've took GM, the multiplicative group. And here I have an abelian variety or an elliptic curve. When I'm looking for points, here the group law on GM is just multiplication, usual multiplication, and here it's addition. But to be killed by P means P times the point is 0. And if P is the characteristic as it is here, then I should expect fewer points. So that's what we're seeing here. But now, look, when in D equals 1, you have only, in this torus case, you only have one root. In the one-dimensional case, you have two possibilities, 0 roots or P roots. But in the higher dimensional case, you have a whole spectrum from 0 to D. Okay? 0 would be the supersingular case, and D would be the ordinary case. But you have an entire spectrum in between, which you don't have in the elliptic curve case, which you have to worry about. It's also, by the way, worthwhile to note here that this is a reason for looking at group schemes rather than groups. From the point of view of group schemes, we can recover the missing points. We can recover, sort of, the missing points. See, the point is that if I think of this as being defined, this thing is defined by equations, but I also keep track of functions on that finite set, then this operation still captures them. So what I'm, maybe I'll say it like this, that you see, GM is basically spec of this group. And then what I'm modding out by is T minus 1 to the P when I get in this equation here. So I have spec of this thing. You see, it's not trivial. It's not consisting of one point. The point is that the ring of functions sees the fact that I have a degree P equation. Only thing is, it has nilpotence. Okay, it's not a reduced scheme. But the point is that it's sometimes useful to keep both of those in mind. From the point of view of computation, we want actual points. But geometrically, it's not points that are there, but functions. Functions are there. A right dimension space of functions exist. But they don't generate points. So this is a a little bit unintuitive at first. You can have schemes that don't have points, pointless schemes, but they do have a point. Here, yeah, but geometrically, so it's like saying this: one is being counted p times. Yeah, exactly. It's a heavy point, right? Exactly, they're all the same. So if I'm counting it as a set without multiplicities, I see only the one point. But right, if I count multiplicities, then I see that it's a heavy point. So I do want to talk a little bit about group schemes when we come to this particular topic, because I think it's useful to keep this in mind. Okay. So why did I get to that? Oh, pairings, right. So in the abelian variety case, now we have a pairing of A bracket M, so the Wey pairing, is a pairing of A bracket M not with itself, but with A hat bracket M. So we have to here define the dual abelian variety. So I have A, and there's a dual, A hat, which is isogenous. In other words, it differs from A by a finite group, but it's not the same abelian variety. And the pairing, which in elliptic curves you're used to seeing as E bracket M cross E bracket M to mu M, is actually, in the higher dimensional case, pairs A and A hat. In the dimension 1 case, A hat is isomorphic to A. It's the same, so that's why you don't see the dual. So you have a pairing, and now people use this pairing to attack discrete log on some elliptic curves, namely the supersingular elliptic curve. And you can do that here as well. So this can be used transfer the discrete log problem on A to a finite field in the case A is supersingular. So it's like the analog of the MOV attack. So in the abelian varieties case, in the elliptic curve case, the people would say, oh, okay, we've got the MOV attack, so don't use supersingular curves, use ordinary curves. That's it as far as choosing curves is concerned. But here you see we have an entire spectrum. Supersingular is only one end of the spectrum. So what does this tell you about the remainder of the spectrum? This is an interesting question which has not been answered yet. So I'm going to, but I believe it can be answered. And we will, if we have time, we'll discuss it in the course. And if we don't have time, it'll make, I think, a fairly good thesis topic. So the question really is, what can be said about if A is nearly supersingular? And I'm going to say what I mean by that in a second. So here, see, the rank R is going between 0 and D, and rank 0 is supersingular. So my question really is, if R equals 1, can pairings be used to solve discrete log on A faster than the generic attack? In other words, you always have the generic square root attack, right? If you have any group, you can solve discrete log in roughly O square root of the order of the group amount of time. So my question is, and this point of pairings is to just radically change the problem by moving it to a finite field where you have index calculus type of methods. And but what if, and by the way, why does that work? Why does MOV attack work? It works because you use the super singularity to say that the roots of Frobenius look like q to the half times the root of unity. You remember the Riemann hypothesis told us the roots of Frobenius all have absolute value q to the half, right? So it's q to the half times something of absolute value 1. But in the supersingular curve, supersingular case, that thing of absolute value 1 is in fact a root of unity. Which means that if you make and moreover you can bound the root of what degree that root of unity is. In fact, it's at most a 6th or a 12th root of unity. 12? 6th root of unity. So if you make a base change of degree 6, which is absolutely bounded, has nothing to do with the specific elliptic curve that you've chosen, you can kill that root of unity. So then your roots of Frobenius are just pure powers of Q. And you use that fact to say that the order of the group then has to be divisible by 1 less than a small power of Q. Which means that in this thing here, the M that you choose can be a small power of Q. And so therefore, because you have a good way to attack the discrete log problem in the group of roots of unity in a finite field, you're in good shape. Now, theoretically, most of that argument will work for any elliptic curve, except that the finite field you get where you have to solve the discrete log problem is now huge. So it's impractical. It's as hard as solving it in the original elliptic curve. Okay, that's the idea behind, in words, that's the idea behind the MOV attack. Now my question is, when R equals 1, you do not have this fact that it's q to the half times the root of unity. But you do have new information on the Newton polygon. And the thing to think about is how we can use that information to say something about the discrete law. So that's the one thing I will talk about near the end of the course. But if one of you solves it before then, that's fine. As I said, it's a reasonable thesis topic. Okay, the last thing is, I think that's actually it. I can give you references for these nearly supersingular abelian varieties were discussed by Zarhin. He calls them abelian varieties of K3 type. And as I said, they're, I think, good targets for trying to attack the discrete log problem on. Okay, so that's the high-level overview of some of the things. I've not said, by the way, how I propose to deal with explicit arithmetic, but other than to say that we'll use line bundles. But since I haven't completely figured that out, I'll leave it at that for now. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, then all I want to do in the remainder of the time then is list some topics. So maybe I'll just say it orally. So next time we will start from the beginning with basic properties. I'll prove things like the fact the group is commutative. I'll show you how you can get, it's a very important point, how you can use the algebraic variety structure to deduce the group properties from very minimal information. See, if I give you a set, and I ask you to put a group law on that set. Okay, so I give you a set, and I say put a group law on that set. Okay, so then you have to define some map from here to here. And now what, then you start saying, what properties do I need to impose on that map to make sure it's a group? Well, so you have a list of axioms. You try to do it. And you find that the most difficult one to satisfy is the associative law. So you would think that it, just by giving a function like this, I can't get a group. I need to give you some more information. And yet, for a complete variety, complete algebraic variety, if I give you a map like this, if this S is known to you to be a complete algebraic variety, and I give you a map like this, that is a morphism, in other words, it's a map of algebraic varieties, and I tell you only one piece of information, it's got a two-sided identity element. Okay, there exists an identity element. In other words, there exists an element such that, let's call it M. M times S comma E equals S, and M of E comma S equals S for all S in S. And this is a morphism. And S is complete. Complete algebraic variety, complete variety. Then this implies S is an abelian variety. In other words, I can deduce all the group properties, commutativity, associativity, the left and right inverses, everything, just from knowing that. So that's astonishing at first, but I think it's very important for, to point this out. There's an interplay going on between the group structure and the geometric structure. And so if we want to study abelian varieties from the point of view of cryptography or anything else for that matter, we've got to understand that interplay. Okay. So next time I will discuss this and prove this. Which one? This one? You've got to use this, there's a so-called rigidity property. That's sort of the key. So if you've got a map on a variety, on a complete variety, S cross S to S, which has the property that if I fix one of the variables, it's constant, then you can prove that in that case, so in other words here, that's what's happening, sorry, it's not happening here, but suppose it's a key property is rigidity. So if I have a map, something else, let's say U, from S cross S to S, with the property that U of S cross alpha, so suppose there exists alpha in S, such as U of S cross alpha is constant. Okay, so in other words, if I fix the second component, I don't care what the first component is, this thing is going to send it to a constant. You wanted a hint, not the proof. Okay, so I'll give you another hint. Okay, so if I have such a thing, you see, then U is in fact what? U is then there exists a map G from S to S, such that U is G followed by projection. Fantastic statement. You see. I have a map of morphism, a morphism of varieties. If I have the property that if I, on one fiber, okay, think of this as S fibered over itself, on one fiber is staying constant, then it means that really the whole thing depends only on the second factor. There's some map on the second factor. So hold on, I'm sorry, I should put this. I project to the second factor and then it's G. So that's one key fact. And now you're asking, how does that relate to M? And the point is that I'll apply this to the following variant of M. Which will map A comma B. Let me see, I'll map this, I think it goes to A, B, B. So, now, if I say E, does that work? Let's see. I want to have this property here that it maps the whole of, if I fix B, no, that's not good. Sorry? A, B, A? Like this? I say, wait a minute, I have to map from here to. Oh, okay, let me, actually, hold on. This is mapping from S cross S. I want to inverse where? Here?
Okay, so let's see what we should put here. We'll put B. Yeah, it's not meant to be trivial or easy or anything, but there is a map, and it's supposed to, I want to emphasize, I mean, even if you forget the details of the argument, okay, or even if you never understand the argument, it doesn't matter. What I want you to take away from this is, you cannot ignore either part. You cannot ignore the geometry and say, I just want to work with the group. Because the geometry is influencing the group very strongly, and the group is influencing the geometry. For example, an abelian variety is necessarily smooth. It doesn't have singular points. But that comes from the group structure. You take one smooth point and then translate it using the group. See, that interplay is what we should try to pick up. Okay, So either Masroor will give the proof of this next time, or I'll do it. I think that's about. Let's stop here for today. Yeah. Good, thanks. So Wednesday we'll try to meet 10 to 12. But check the website. Check Allison. You know, everyone know Allison? Allison Conway. So look for that, and I'm hoping there will be a meeting Wednesday 10 to 12. I want to go 10 to 12, but sometimes I get tired.
No, I want to. Will you give break? Because
I can if you want, sure.
Because we have the seminar on Monday on module 3.
Yes.
And if you go.